Hi, this is Pastor Mark Azil, the LCMS Director of Campus Ministry and LCMSU, inviting all college students and those with an interest in campus ministry to join us for Taboo, the 2015 National LCMS Campus Ministry Conference, this coming January 5th through 7th at St. Louis University in St. Louis. That's right, it's Taboo in the Lou. Find out more at lcms.org/LCMSU.
My wife came to me and said, you know, I've got a terrible disease. I want suicide. I would say, absolutely not. You cannot take away from me, A, your presence, and B, my loving privilege to care for you for as long as you live.
The church looks like this grotesque old lady with hair grown out of her face, and we want her to be this gorgeous porn star. There is no way to turn grandma into a porn star, and we shouldn't want to.
The Scripture is not a book about me. It's not an instruction book for my life.
Former evangelicals on track to be Lutheran pastors by attending Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Love, issues, etc.
It's often said, there's no doubt about it, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Now, we usually say this when we're looking at something that we do not consider, or someone that we don't consider particularly beautiful, but someone else does. But is it true? Is it true that beauty is a purely subjective impression, something that we decide for ourselves? Now, in an age when everything has been made subjective, including truth and goodness and evil, we often don't even consider how beauty has fallen by the wayside as an objective thing, is it? We're going to answer that question here in the first half hour of Issues Etc. Bob Perry, author of an article in the latest Christian Research Journal titled A Mind for the Beautiful, will be our guest. We're going to talk about the objectivity of beauty. You know, the old philosophers used to have three things that went together: truth, goodness, and beauty. Well, they've all been detached from one another, and all of them seem to be highly subjective. Relativistic, even. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live this Monday afternoon. It's the 17th of November. Thanks for tuning us in. I'm Todd Wilkin. As I said, Bob Perry will be our guest here for the first half hour. A little bit later, Pastor Charles St. Ange will join us. We'll respond to a recent column in the New Yorker titled Pope Francis and the GOP's Bad Science. Molly Ziegler-Hemingway of The Federalist will join us in the second hour of the program. She's written recently about feminist bullies and why we should stand up to them. We'll get her thoughts, and then Pastor Tom Baker will be alongside to teach our weekly Sunday school lesson. Today it'll be Jacob and Esau. He's host of a radio show called Law and Gospel. That's hour two of Issues Etc. For the next 2 hours, you can give us a call with questions or comments, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at @issuesetc. Or our beloved on-demand listeners can always use the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382, 618-223-8382. Bob Perry is a speaker with the Life Training Institute and crossexamined.org, and he's author of an article in the latest Christian Research Journal titled A Mind for the Beautiful. Bob, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me, Todd.
What's wrong with that often quoted phrase that beauty is in the eye of the beholder?
Well, Todd, I actually noticed exactly what you said there in your intro about the fact that whenever I read philosophers or philosophy books, that people talked about truth, goodness, and beauty, they always put them together in a kind of triumvirate of that was objective. And we, a lot of the reading and writing I do with doing apologetic work, we talk about truth and goodness a lot. How we should fight against the relativistic subjective view of truth, how we should fight against the same kind of view of goodness, that those are actually objective truths that are rooted in God's character. I started to notice that I saw a lot about truth and goodness, but didn't ever see much about beauty. And all of us are used to, you know, saying beauty's in the eye of the beholder. It's something that we decide for ourselves what we like, but I realized as I began reading and seeing this more and more often that what we're really talking about there is attractiveness. something that we like, we are attracted to subjectively. But that's not how the ancient philosophers talked about beauty. Beauty was an objective thing. So I started looking into it more, and it's amazing. When it's like when you buy a new car and you think you have your car is unique, and then you start driving around and see everybody else, that car kind of jumps out. I started seeing this in different writings that I was looking at, books that I was reading, that Plato and Aristotle and the ancient philosophers, you thought of beauty the same way we try to make the case for truth and goodness now, that there was something about it that was built into the thing that we were looking at, that we recognized. It wasn't something that we made up for ourselves. And so I basically, in writing this article, was me coming to the realization that beauty was the same type of thing as objective truth and goodness. And when you start digging into that, you find a lot of very interesting things. I'm not sure what exactly you want to get into with that now, but basically I saw that it was something that's inherent in the universe that we live in, that it resonates with us, and that part of being made in the image of God means that we should be reflectors of that. And I think this is a very powerful tool that we can use in our apologetic work to try to reach people who have been turned off and are kind of immune to the idea that truth and goodness are objective. Maybe beauty is something that we can use that will be more effective.
And I agree with you there. I sometimes wonder what's the relationship between the rejection of the objectivity of all three, because it strikes me that the rejection of beauty as an objective thing, that there is such a thing as beauty and its corollary in, I guess, things that are not beautiful. I don't even know what adjective to use there. That the rejection of that in kind of the modern / postmodern mind is very closely tied to the rejection of the objectivity of truth and of morality, isn't it?
Yes, it is. In fact, Aquinas and those guys talked about this kind of thing, and it's the same type. You know, people, if you look at the culture now, we think truth is up to us to decide. We think morality is up to us to decide. So if truth, goodness, and beauty are related, it makes perfect sense that the world is going to try to turn the way God made things upside down or inside out to where humanity is the center of the universe instead of God. And I think that's exactly what we see going on with beauty. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder is like the iconic statement of that point of view.
Is there a definition, a working definition for beauty that we can use in the course of this conversation?
Oh boy, when you talk about the beauty of the ancient philosophers as they described it, it was something they recognized that had symmetry, order, balance, unity, proportion. Plato called it the highest form of perfection, and so. I guess that's a definition, if you want to use it, that it's something that exists in the universe that we should be drawn to because we are made in the image of God. There's also another kind of aspect that the Greeks used to talk about it involved time. And I thought this was interesting that when something became what it was designed by God to be, when it reached its potential, or its the telos, as we call it, the teleological reason for that it existed, like a flower. When the flower blooms, that's when it's become exactly what it's supposed to be, and that's when we should see the beauty in it, or when an apple ripens or something. The one that was very interesting to me, the example I've read about, was the women. If we see a beautiful woman, it has to do with the age. Like a young girl is beautiful when she acts and becomes the young girl that she is. If a young girl tries to act older than she really is, that's she's not living out what she's supposed to be designed to be. Same with an older woman who tries to act like a younger girl. There was a kind of a timing. In fact, the word for beauty that the Greeks used came from the word that we have now used as time. So it's a pretty deep meaning. I don't know if I could define it with just one simple definition, but I hope that helps.
It seems to be not only in the ancient philosophers, but also kind of in the Christian mind, to be closely tied to creation, to what we find in creation as kind of ideals of beauty or models of beauty that we kind of naturally recognize out there in the world, and then closely then tied to the relationship of creation to the creator. What are your thoughts there?
Right. Yeah. Aquinas talked about beauty as that which gives us pleasure when seen. And that almost sounds like beauty's in the eye of the beholder. So I dug into that a little more. And what Aquinas, when he said when he used the word seen, he didn't mean just look at it and how do I feel when I look at it. He taught his working idea of something being seen was active contemplation, was the definition that I found, where when you have to really deeply consider something and see the God-given design that's in that thing to be able to recognize that it is beautiful because it has its origin in the character or person of God himself.
So talk a little bit about the relationship between this and you write about it in your article, the relationship between objective beauty and math.
Yeah, it's funny, the things that show up. You know, a lot of us who do apologetic work talk about the anthropic principle, where it looks like the universe was designed for humans, eventually for human beings to be here and live here and come to know God here. So that's a part of it, but there's also the way we study science. You know, Galileo said that mathematics is the language with which God wrote the universe. And so if these things that pop up in just the regular nature that we see, the Fibonacci sequence, if people are familiar with that, there's a ratio of things that seems to be pleasing and attractive to us that shows up in some of the most unconnected places, the honeybee reproduction patterns in the nautilus shell, the shape of the nautilus shell, how it gradually expands. These sequences pop up all throughout nature, and it's not that we make them up, we discover them in there. It even goes to the simple thing as the shapes of the pyramids, the shapes of picture frames that are pleasing to the eye. These are all things that are rooted in a mathematical ratio that we have discovered in the world. One of the most fascinating things to me, my undergraduate degree was in engineering, and Euler's equation, which is a kind of a bizarre thing. If someone's not familiar with mathematics, they might not recognize it, but it's the equation is e to the I pi, to the power I times pi plus 1 equals 0. And Euler was supposed to have said, when he discovered this relationship between these are irrational numbers that are put together to make a simple, beautiful equation. And Euler is said to have said, when he discovered this formula, e to the I pi plus 1 equals 0, therefore God exists. It's a fascinating study to look at how mathematics shows up in everything in the universe. And as Galileo said, that's because that was the language God used. I could go on and on with that, but it's very interesting stuff to look into.
Are we wired to recognize the beauty that God has, out of which he has kind of structured his creation?
Yeah, I think so. It resonates with us when we hear music and your foot just starts tapping, or composers, you know, the composers, medieval or whatever composers who used to, Beethoven and Bach, they would write their music. There were harmonies in there that were just, they would arouse passions in people, they would bring people to tears. You know, that it seems like that's kind of gone in the music we have today, but there is the beat and harmonies of music can stir emotions in us, and I think that's because we are wired to recognize that beauty inherent in the music, which is also, again, mathematical. Harmonies are half and quarter tones of a central note, And those kind of things resonate with us and make us, they have even emotional reactions for that reason.
So what happened to a world that almost universally recognized the beautiful, not just beauty, but the beautiful, in art, in music, in all of the disciplines, in mathematics, all of those places where you will hear mathematicians routinely talk about a certain equation or a formula being elegant or beautiful. And they intuitively say there's a connection between that and truth. You don't find nonsensical things being described as elegant or beautiful. What happened to a world that recognized all of that, Bob, and now has relativized all of it, truth, beauty, goodness?
Well, I mean, a simple answer would be the Enlightenment, where when we started to ignore the idea that God's revelation was something that from which we could get knowledge, and started to replace that, we split the world basically. The facts and values, faith and science, all those things got split up into a humanistic view where man was at the center of things. And when you do that, everything's fair game. There is no objective way to put something because everybody's point of view is the same. Subjectivism rules. And when we did that, because truth, goodness, and beauty were all connected in that idea of the character of God, it got put into a place that becomes personal preference. So it makes perfect sense that truth and goodness, like I said, we always talk about that, but beauty went right along with it. It becomes personal preference. And I think it's just a way of thinking that seeped into academics, it seeped into the culture, and because it's human-centered, we are quick to grab onto that and run with it. It sounds there are parts of the Enlightenment that were good, but some of the aspects that came out of the Enlightenment led to this kind of thing, and I think we're seeing the repercussions of that today everywhere we look.
Bob Perry is our guest. He's a speaker with Life Training Institute and CrossExamine.org. We're talking about the objectivity of beauty on this Monday afternoon, November the 17th. He's author of an article in the latest Christian Research Journal titled A Mind for the Beautiful. We'll talk more with him right after this.
You are so beautiful. So beautiful.
Election analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Carol Tobias, president of National Right to Life.
We had some candidates who thought that if they went into their districts or their states and talked only about abortion and women's reproductive rights, that they were going to win. They thought that was the magic bullet. It did not work.
Brian Brown, president of the National Organization for Marriage.
Look at the races where Republicans endorse same-sex marriage. Then look at how candidates did that were Republican, that were champions of traditional marriage. You couldn't be more wrong to say that marriage didn't have an impact in the election. It had a big impact.
Greg Smith of the Pew Research Center.
Among voters who attend church or another house of worship at least weekly, almost 6 in 10 voted Republican. Among people who say they never attend religious services, most voted Democratics.
An angle on the midterm elections you won't hear covered by Fox News, CNN, or NBC. Issues Etc., your comprehensive source for news, information, and truth.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Arch Fitness of Greater St. Louis has a new fall schedule for adult boot camps and sports performance training classes. There's plenty of flexibility with workouts on weekday mornings, weekday evenings, or even Saturday mornings. Arch Fitness is located at 127 West MacArthur Drive in Cottage Hills, Illinois. For more information, check out the Facebook fan page for Arch Fitness or call Kevin Reisick at 618-670-6952. Get in shape this fall with Arch Fitness of Cottage Hills, Illinois.
Mary's Song, the Magnificat, the song of the angels' announcement to the shepherds, Simeon's song of praise in the temple. The Issues Etc. book of the month is titled The Songs of Christmas. This new Arch book would make a great Christmas gift for children ages 2 through 10.
The Songs of Christmas is published by Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, or you can find out more at issuesetc.org. A great stocking stuffer for young children or grandchildren, The Songs of Christmas. Welcome back to Issues Etc. Live this Monday afternoon. It's the 17th of November. We're talking about the objectivity of beauty. Bob Perry is our guest, a speaker with Life Training Institute and CrossExamine.org, author of an article in the latest Christian Research Journal titled A Mind for the Beautiful. You will find links to Life Training Institute and to CrossExamine.org under the Listen On Demand page at IssuesETC.org. Bob, talk a little bit about our place in this, man's place in this, is not only the one who sees, recognizes, appreciates these things, but who reflects this beauty. How would you go about that?
Yeah, being made in the image of God, that's something that people, we say that, but I don't know how much we think through what it really means. Part of it is that we are creators too, that God, because we are like the God in that way, obviously we're not God, but we're like him in that way, that we should be creators. In fact, the interesting part that point that I found is in Ephesians 2, God refers to mankind as his workmanship, poema, which is an artistic word. It's like we are his artwork. So if that's the kind of creation, the way God looks at the creation, then we should be creators too. I think we should reflect it in our art, in our music, architecture. You know, we just talked about the Enlightenment and postmodern architecture, just the square, plain, bland, dull architecture that we've gotten used to in modern buildings. The ancient cathedrals were nothing like that. They pointed to God. They were in the shape of a cross for a reason. The mind of God was in all that. In inventions, the way that we think and design things, even down to a computer motherboard, that reflects the creativity of God. I'm a pilot. I make my living as a pilot. And one of the things that fascinated me also with this was finding that the Wright brothers, when they designed the airplane, you know, they didn't design the first workable airplane. They designed the first airplane that was controllable. And the reason they did that, Wilbur Wright spent hours upon hours drawing and watching birds fly. And from that, he saw how they moved their wings, how their feathers worked with the airflow. And that's how he came up with the idea to design an airplane that could maneuver in the air. So that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. It should be in everything we do. I think we should be the best artists, musicians, architects, inventors, Christians. That used to be the place Christians had, and it seems like we've kind of given that up to the culture, and each of those things has lost its power as a result.
How do we regain this? Obviously, the beauty is there. It's not as though the universe and how God structured it beautifully has disappeared. Our ability to recognize it or to admit it, how do we regain that?
Well, that's the $64,000 question. I think we need to not only, as reflectors of beauty, do that kind of thing. There are people out there now. There are websites for writers who offer avenues to get Christian-based literature out there, more into the culture. There are movie companies that are coming out that are trying to do that. And I think we need to be appealing to the culture in the sense that we reflect that beauty, but we don't have to do it. You know, some of the Christian literature and some Christian movie making has turned almost, I hate to use the word cheesy, but it's just kind of, it's just too much. Why can't we just write stories, normal stories where Christian characters are developed, where the beauty of God is displayed without being in your face obvious about it? But it's something that will appeal to people. The use of story is very postmodern, but we can write stories. The Bible is a story, so we should be able to capture people with stories, with imagery, with the rhythm of songs and lyrics, with our art, our architecture. I think that's a way, you know, people are resistant in the postmodern world to the idea that objective truth and goodness are something that they should adhere to. But so maybe the passion and the emotion of story and rhythm and music and imagery is a way that we can appeal to people to make the case that God really is where they should draw their attention, where the center of things should be, instead of in our own personal opinion.
You mentioned
it's a thought.
Well, you mentioned early in our conversation the apologetic value of this. We have something; it's working for us as Christian apologists to have these. It's difficult, you know, to say, "Well, here's the truth," because people say, "Well, I can't see the truth," or "Here is the good." People say, "I can't see the good," but beauty, although it's not always seen, is certainly seen. Does it make it a particularly powerful apologetic tool?
Oh, I think it does, absolutely. If you could appeal to someone's emotions and passions with a good story or a good work of art or architecture, like something like that, and then make the case why that is an objective feature that has drawn them to that, even though we may not have points of view in common on the other apologetic issues, we can agree on what is a powerful artistic expression or movie or story, and maybe that could just be the start of a conversation. It does seem to be more difficult to convince people that beauty is objective. When I've talked to other people about this, it's really hard for them to get it, to think that way. We have to turn our thinking almost upside down, and I think the fact that we can use emotion and story to do that kind of thing is another way to break the barriers. It's something that we all hold in common.
I mean, it's certainly trying to, as you said, kind of carve out that small piece of common ground that the believer has, that may have with the unbeliever with that respect. But is beauty, in the end, something that one might be able to deny exists objectively? But you can only deny it for so long. I mean, it is the force of it is simply too powerful.
That's what I think. I mean, sure, there are different reasons people reject the ideas of God. Intellectual reasons, emotional reasons, volitional reasons. I think this is a way to overcome volitional resistance if you appeal to the passion of the person. That's something they can't deny. Even if they have rejected God, they're still made in his image. That reality is still there, and I think it's something very powerful that we can appeal to.
So finally, does it come down to something as simple as this? Say, everyone finds something beautiful. We don't all agree on what that something might be, but everyone finds something beautiful. No one can look out into the world and say, this is unless they want to commit kind of intellectual, emotional suicide, you know, this is a random pattern world that I'm looking at. There's nothing beautiful out here. Everyone finds it someplace. Is that what you're talking about? See where the other person finds it and then work from there?
That's exactly what I'm talking about. And then that can bring up the discussion, well, why is it that we both see this as something that appeals to us for some reason? What's the reason? If we're both individuals with different tastes, what is it that draws both of us to that? And then we can get to a discussion of, you know, the character and person of God is behind it all. It's not everyone is going to be open to apologetic arguments of any kind, but I think it's a very powerful way that hasn't been used much, in my opinion, that we can reach people who may be rejecting the idea of God.
Bob Perry is a speaker with Life Training Institute and CrossExamine.org. He's author of an article for the latest Christian Research Journal titled A Mind for the Beautiful. Bob, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thanks for having me. Have a good day, Todd.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Pastor Charles St. Ange. There's a recent column in the New Yorker titled Pope Francis and the GOP's Bad Science. We'll talk politicians, science, and the Pope with Pastor Charles St. Ange right after this.
Did you know that we send out an email each week that details upcoming show topics? It's available for you to include in your weekly church bulletin. Just click the Issues Etc. Journal logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, and sign up to receive the church bulletin blurb. It's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen to Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Look for the Issues Etc. Journal logo and register to receive a weekly bulletin paragraph from Issues Etc.
Do you wish your Lutheran school offered Latin, Greek, or logic? What about German or calculus? Right now, local Lutheran schools in two different states are utilizing Wittenberg Academy to expand their course offerings. Whether it's Latin for third graders or logic for seniors in high school, Wittenberg Academy can help. For your homeschooler or for your brick-and-mortar Lutheran school, we have solutions. To find out more, visit wittenbergacademy.org.
The 500th anniversary of the Lutheran Reformation is fast approaching. We have such a rich history as Lutherans, and many people don't realize that. The CLCC offers a seminar called Your Reformation Walk that teaches that rich heritage and helps you appreciate it. The CLCC also offers other seminars designed to help laity learn to appreciate what Lutherans believe, teach, and confess. So invite us to your church. Visit theclcc.org and get details on scheduling a seminar for your church today.
A confessional liturgical Lutheran congregation in southeast Michigan in Rochester Hills. The Lutheran Church of the Incarnate Word. That's lciw.org. We gather for the divine service every Sunday, 9:30 a.m. at Lutheran High School Northwest. The Lutheran Church of the Incarnate Word. Find us on the internet at lciw.org.
Daily exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Comfort, comfort, ye my people, for unto us a child is born. Good news of great joy, the titles of Christ, the Magnificat. These are some of the Christmas card themes produced by Ad Crucem. Send a greeting card this Christmas season that's centered on the gospel of Jesus Christ. AdCrucem.com, confessing the faith through art and word. AdCrucem.com, A-D-C-R-U-C-E-M.com.
Is the Lord's Day sanctified by man's work or man's rest? I've written an article for the latest Issues Etc. journal titled Lord's Day, Lord's House, Lord's Supper. You can read it by subscribing to the online Issues Etc. journal. Just look for the red subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. The Wittenberg Trail feature details former Baptist minister Dennis McFadden's journey to the objectivity of the Lutheran Confession of Faith. The free Issues Etc. journal.